This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 23. Analyse this. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, everyone's got a camera these days, so how do you make the most of it to analyse yourself during a game? We talk it through, the team, Garrers, Lavers, and me. And we also answer your questions, as we always do. We teach you how to pick the gaps while batting and how to deal with falling away when you're bowling. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is the place for you to settle down and listen to half an hour of a guide to helping you play better cricket or coach better cricket wherever you are and whoever you are. My name is David Hinchliffe and I look after things. And giving the advice, the detailed and expert advice, as always, are two cricket coaches who do a very good job every week. First is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
Hello, how's all? Everybody okay?
Yes, very good, thanks. Yes, slightly flustered when I realised that I'd missed the change of the start time of the recording of this, but I'm ready to go now. I'm fully engaged.
Awesome stuff.
Second, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hi, David.
And I've got some coaching news from myself that I thought we could turn into a discussion at the start of the show. And that is that, as we've talked about before, I've managed to extricate myself from playing. And now I am coaching full-time. In the selection meeting last night at my club, my name wasn't even mentioned in dispatches. It was just completely assumed that I wouldn't be playing. And that suits me down to the ground. I can concentrate on coaching. But what I thought I would do is up the analysis side of things. And to do that, I thought I would get some advice from you chaps who have a lot of experience in the analysis side. But as the only guy there, we don't have an analyst. As the only guy there, I wanted to talk a bit about what coaches or captains can do to improve the analysis that they do during games. I mean, video is the obvious thing. So can I get some thoughts from you chaps on when you've got a coach available or someone available who can video the game, what would be the basics of doing that to get the most out of it?
Well, I think the first question you've got to ask yourself, and everybody's circumstances will be different, is what are you looking to gather through video in the game? Because I see a lot of people putting their video camera up at the end of a cricket pitch and pressing start and then going back to it at the end of a game and getting it. But my question there is, what are you going to then do with it? Because you've watched a game of cricket through your own eyes, then you watch it again through a video lens. Well, that's a long time. And then you've got to extrapolate all the information that comes out of it. So I always question people that do that. Unless you've got people who you can give it back to at your schools or your clubs, who can then have the time to sit through 6 hours of cricket or 4 hours of cricket and gather information and cut the footage and all of that, I wouldn't bother just putting a video camera up for putting a video camera's sake up. One of the things that I think you can do with videos is when you're batting, for example, if your top six are batting, then maybe numbers 10 and 11 go around and take some video, just random shots from side-on footage, which we don't tend to see a lot of when we're playing cricket, of just certain balls, not any specific balls, just randomly walking around the ground, taking some from sideways on, and then maybe if you can get into a position where you've got a height that you can look straight down the pitch, or maybe from behind the bowler's arm or whatever, then take a few bits of footage there of each of the batters, because that will give them an insight that they wouldn't have normally have experienced in their own cricket life. And it might give them a perspective on something which confirms something that they're working on, or maybe challenges something that they thought that they did. So I'd be very specific around that. And then when the lower order get to go in, then not as a to penalise anybody who's got out, but to give a video camera to the upper order. And then one of the things that you can do by combining the lower order and the top order is have like a buddy up system. So it's up to the the number 11 say to feed back to the opening batter on what he saw and what he sees on the video screen. When they do that, that gets a better connection between the upper and lower order, and it tries to promote some conversation. England ran a buddy-up system a number of years ago, and Paul Collingwood worked with Monty Panesar, and we did stuff like this, taking video cameras around and working with each other in the nets. And Collie and Monty worked together for a long time on each other's games. And when Monty then blocked out that for ages in that test match at Cardiff in 2009 to get that draw, I think Collie was probably the guy who was feeling best about that, even more about than Monty, because he'd worked so hard with him, both through video feedback and also in the net. So I think that's a good way of doing it. The other thing I'd say is, if there's anybody on the sidelines that normally takes a camera with them and takes some snaps, as a lot of parents do nowadays, then they can provide you with great stills that tell a story as well. And we've got a parent that comes along to 14s and 15 games at school, and she provides us with loads of snaps of different shots of the game, which we put up on our website and put within our school reports. But more importantly than that, from my perspective, it shows us some great angles and great perspectives on bowling actions, on batting shots, where contacts are made and all of that. So she sends me through 20-25 pitches every game, and we've actually used it in at least 10 coaching opportunities over the course of the last few weeks. So I think, you know, the value of vision is brilliant, but most of the time it's around us and we don't utilise it properly.
Lavis, you've got an interesting idea for, if you are videoing the whole match, of a way of being able to just quickly get back to some key points rather than having to watch the game again.
Yeah, because as Gareth said, when you've got, even if it's a 20-20 match, you've generally got 2.5 hours of footage, maybe three. And if it's an all-day game, you can be daunted with the prospect of 6 or 7 hours of footage, which, if you have to rewatch that, it's gonna take a little bit of time. So we've just got to try and find a way of being a little bit more effective. And obviously, if you've got a expensive analysis system, then everything works for you. But if you haven't got that, there's a pretty simple thing you can do. All I encourage our coaches to do at Portsmouth Grammar School, so our 12s and 13s are doing this at the moment, is filming the game and starting a stopwatch at the same time you press record on the camera. So they're running side by side time-wise. And as soon as you spot an event that you think is of interest, or you think that is something that the team have done particularly well, or something the team particularly poorly and they can improve upon, just write down the time on a little timeline and put a few notes next to it of something that's relevant to you. And then you can come back to it at a later date. So when you actually get your video footage at the end and you pick up your camera and you've got this 3 hours of footage or 5 hours of footage or however much it may be, you're then in a position where you can just skim through quickly to an hour and 10 minutes in, you know something happened, and 2 hours in, you know something happened, or 15 minutes in, you know something happened. And then you've got some specifics you can start work to when you do a little review session. And that's a pretty effective way to do it. You can go into it quite open-minded and say, I'm just going to watch the game and let the game happen, and I'll spot things as they occur. Or you can go into it with a specific idea in mind of, this is what I want to work on. Make that either known to your team or not. So you might want to focus on running between the wickets, or you may want to focus on fielders getting into set position. So you may want to focus on bowlers committing to a plan, or how we set a field, or whatever it might be. And that just gives you a little bit of direction. But as I said, it just cuts down that 3, 4, 5 hours of footage into maybe 4 or 5 simple events through the game. You can fast forward through to them straight away. You can delete the rest of the footage if you want to, or you can just use them for a one-off review session. And now that review session is going to take 10 or 15 minutes rather than taking hours and hours scrolling through the footage trying to find what you want to do. And I believe this is something you've done already, David.
Yeah, I had a go at it in a 2020 game last week when we were batting. I couldn't do it when we were fielding because one of our players couldn't field, so I had to take the 12th man role. But I did that, and I chopped it down to, using your stopwatch, it took me about half an hour to chop the full 2020 game down into a 3-minute highlights clip, and then I presented that to the 2020 guys, And immediately people coming back to me saying, well, this is really useful. You know, one guy said to me, I've never seen myself bat before on video, and it's really revealing to me the way that I play. And so, you know, they're already getting good feedback from that. So it's definitely, it doesn't take a lot of time, but you get some good results from it. I've already seen that.
And what kind of approach did you take? Were you looking for specifics? Were you just doing some general filming and trying to pinpoint anything that occurred to you? Or did you let the team know what you were doing and what you were looking for? What was your general approach?
I didn't let them know. I anyone who asked, I said, oh, I'm just filming the game just for some general analysis. And then yep. I had some thoughts in mind of what might occur during the game from previously what I've seen happen. And some of those things did occur and some of those things didn't occur. And I just made notes as I went along. For example, you know, any ones where we missed out on a run when there was a mishit, for example, the guy mishit it and it trickled out and there wasn't a fielder nearby and we didn't take the run because the batsman was still busy thinking about how he's missed out on a boundary. Those kind of little things. I made a note of a few of them and I made a note of a few of the ways we ran when we ran and a few other little things. And there's a lot of things that I saw that I didn't put in at all because I thought, well, it's going to take me too long to edit it all together. So I'll just, for example, we had far too many dots was a big problem. But I didn't even mention that. I just pointed out some of the good things, pointed out some of the things where we can improve. And it took, you know, less than a 3-minute video.
I think you've got to go down that approach. If you try and do everything, you're going to end up with a 6-hour review session. You're going to end up confusing and overloading people. And it gets a little bit too much. Whereas if maybe over a 2 or 3 week period, you can focus on one thing. And you revisit it in maybe 2 weeks' time and you find that actually that running between the wickets or that ability to judge a single or that ability to do whatever it was, that's improved because we've reviewed it, we've talked about it, we've talked about how we can develop it. We've then re-looked at it in 2 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time, that's improved. Right, let's move on and see if we can find a different area. And that's quite a good little cycle you can go through of 2 or 3 or 4 weeks or however it fits into your season. And throughout a period of the whole season, you might find that three or four facets of the game for your team have dramatically improved just because of a little bit of analysis, an analysis without a lot of expense. I think a lot of clubs have people with a camera. It doesn't have to be a fancy one, really, because you're not doing a lot of detailed slow motion stuff. It can be general gameplay. All it's got to see is kind of where the fielders are or where the ball's gone a little bit. And from that, there's some good information you can get from it.
Did you have some stat stuff as well, Gareth?
Well, I did actually. It supports the work that you've done from a video perspective on that missed run, or how I interpret what you said, you know, the missed run opportunities where the ball trickles into space. There's an app called Dartfish Easy Tag that I know we've mentioned before on the show. But what we do here at school is we have a template that we built together with the things that we're looking to develop. So running between the wickets, so missed runs and stolen runs, so ones that we've taken where other teams wouldn't normally take. Also having saved runs and lost runs where we've lost them in the field through making mistakes and keeping a monitoring on that. And what you'd be able to do with your video system that Sam's talked about is you can have the statistical numbers that are associated with those things that you're looking to develop, i.e. your fielding and your running between the wicket, which then support the video that goes on. So, for example, if you're putting a motivational video together, you could show a couple of examples of stolen runs happening, and then you could overlay how many stolen runs you picked up between the wickets over the course of your game in a little text that comes up as the video piece goes through. Then you're reinforcing those positive behaviours on top of the team that you're working with. And effectively, it works on an iPhone where you can just keep, every time you do it, you click one and it keeps a tally as you go along. The other thing that it does, it links into that timeline approach that you're talking about with stopwatch, because you could synchronise the two, and then you've got some really good references of when the certain events on your video took place as well. So it's something that we do here that has proven to be really beneficial and gets people talking about key aspects of a game, saving runs and also picking up runs. You know, the value of one run is so important in a game of cricket.
People do forget about that sometimes, that it is a game about scoring runs, and a lot of the time people get very caught up in the technical side of batting only or bowling only, and actually how you get from one end to the other and how you make a decision to do that is is such an important thing, because if you're really good at that, that could, that in some cases, that could close to double the amount of runs you're going to score as an individual. So people forget about the simplicity of getting from one end to the other.
Yeah.
Last year, the team that I was working with, which was our Mayor's 11, the most senior team in the school, picked up 311 stolen singles over and above what they lost from missing out on those opportunities to run. Now, if you think about that over the course of a season, that's quite a big number. If you break it down into a number of games, if you play around 20, 22 games, then you're only looking in the high teens, really, for your games, picking up those runs. But you know, how many games go down to 15, 20 runs at the end of a fixture when you're playing in a reasonably competitive league or a reasonably competitive fixture list?
Is that including your fielding data as well as what you've saved, or would that actually be an addition?
No, that's just batting alone. So obviously,
so if you're
saving
10 on the fielding side as well, you can be 25 runs up, can't you?
Yeah, which is massive, isn't it? And psychologically, at halfway, say you've batted first and you've picked up 30 runs or 15, 20 runs more than you should have done through just general awareness, then psychologically it has a huge effect, doesn't it? It can push your already decent score into the realms of impossibility in the minds of the opposition.
I think for certain, I'm working with our boys on occasions, or working with sometimes you get younger teams who know they're coming up against a stronger team, or they're playing a year up against another school or whatever it might be. Just knowing that actually we've got something in the locker that's going to add us 20 runs, that may just give them that extra belief that actually we've got a chance. They probably are better than us, but we've got something that's going to add on 25 runs straight away. Well, there you go. That's the added sort of boost of confidence that they need to make them realise they're in the game.
Exactly right.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the first of the questions, so let's fire away. First question, innovation is different from novelty.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, accurate bowling is less accurate than you think.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, you can always get something out of a session.
Yes.
Definitely. Yes.
This section of the show is all about questions. Questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. And what we do is we attempt to answer those questions as best we can. And then at the end, we pick a winner, which wins a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. That's what Barpreet's done. And Barpreet has a short question, but perhaps it might be a long answer. Barpreet says, hello, I would like to know how to pick gaps while batting. That's one of the tougher batting skills, I think.
Yeah, it is one of the tougher skills. I was very lucky to work alongside a guy called Barry Richards, who was probably one of the best batters of all time. But unfortunately, we didn't get to see much of him on the international stage because of the ban on South Africa playing as a country. During his heyday, really. But he played a lot at Hampshire and his record was phenomenal and was, by all accounts, and from the video footage that I saw, absolutely amazing to watch. He used to bat with the edge of his bat when he got bored instead of the face of it, facing first-class bowlers and various other things, which was always fairly amusing for his teammates. He was a bit special. But one of the things that he talked about was actually always looking at the gap. So he rarely, if ever, looked at fielders. So when he went out there to calibrate his innings and calibrate how it was going to work for him, he stood out there and he would only ever look into space. He would never look at where the fielders were. He would want to take them out of the equation as much as possible and even ignore their presence. So that was one approach, which I thought was fascinating. When it came to being able to place the ball. And he is convinced that it made a massive difference for him in terms of being able to find the gap early because he took the fielders out of the equation. His peers would say to me that exactly the same, you know, that it was amazing how many times he missed fielders. We see a lot of players, don't we? And maybe Barpreet is one of them, who are synonymous with hitting great shots, but actually hitting them at the field. Barry was somebody who rarely hits a fielder. And that's what his peers have told me over the years. So that's one approach which I thought was really interesting, and I've passed that on to a number of people, but I don't expect that's going to work for everybody. The other thing is, how do you pick gaps? Well, if you're a number three or four or even further down the order batter, often you get a perspective of the game that maybe the one and two, the opening batters, don't get, because you get the opportunity to watch the game. And what that does tell you is it gives you the opportunity to see where the fielders are, but also what the pitch is playing like, how the bowlers are bowling, which areas on the field are more spatial, so you've got more space around them, and also which fielders you can pick out a little bit. And that was something, I watched a game here last night that our Mayor's 11 played against King's School, who are a fantastic school, and our ability to pick out the fielders that we could push was phenomenal last night, as well as being able to pick the gap, which they did really well. So I would say you have the advantage batting three down of being able to take on that information and then go out there as an informed player with maybe a clearer mind than the guys that open the batting. The last thing I will say is that people with a broader field of vision, and particularly the guys like a Tendulkar who stand with a narrow stance with a broader field of vision when they're taking in information, often see space easier than the guys who have a narrower field of vision. The narrower field of vision are the guys who pick where fielders are and then try to avoid the fielders, whereas often the guys with a broader field of vision are the ones that are looking for space. Not necessarily gaps, but they'll be looking for space. So an example of looking for space, instead of getting caught up with the fielder at extra cover, the person who looks for space will see the acre and a half of green grass sitting behind that person. So Ian Botham always talks very candidly about the fact that there's a lot of space on a cricket field. And this very much links into Clive Woodward's approach to rugby, which was to take the bird's eye view of a rugby pitch when you're Johnny Wilkinson. So if you see space, you can kick the ball into that space. If you're that bird above the sky, but sometimes when we're on the ground, we only see the people that are standing in front of us. And again, looking at the spaces that are available on a game of cricket was something that I did, taking on the Clive Woodward, Johnny Wilkinson mantra when I worked with Somerset back in 2005. And the team practiced hitting the ball over extra cover and over straight mid-wicket, because generally you've got a football pitch of space sitting behind those two fielding positions. So I think perspective comes in, and also maybe opening your mind to that bird's eye view. It's not just gaps, it's also space.
Yeah, when you think about how much space there is, it's amazing that anyone gets caught out. it's such a small amount of hand and such a large amount of grass.
Well, it's a great point, and I love that bird's eye analogy, because if you think about it, if I said to somebody, I'm going to set a bowling machine up for you, and you've got an acre to hit the ball into, or even half a football pitch to hit the ball into, and you will be safe and you will score runs, and you gave bowling machine 100 bowling machine balls, you'd be pretty comfortable that they'd be able to hit those balls into half a football pitch. But often they get caught up with the 2D view of a game of cricket, which is the fielders surrounding them, instead of exploring those spaces. But, a Tendulkar was a classic for being able to manipulate the ball and put the ball into space. He hit over extra cover, he hit over straight mid-wicket really well, because he wasn't the biggest of hitters. The game's probably changed a bit, even in the short time he's not been playing. But, Joss Butler does a similar thing, but a lot of the time when Joss Butler does it, he's looking at the space about 10 rows back as opposed to over the top of extra cover. But Joss is very similar in that regard and is always looking for opportunities. If a guy's at short fine leg, he explores the space that sits behind them rather than gets put off by playing that ramp because there is a fielder in that place.
What about some kind of practical thing someone can do? Maybe he's in a net scenario or something and he doesn't get a chance to bat in an open situation outside of actually playing in games. How can you kind of recreate that?
Well, something,
that hitting the gaps.
Something we do at school in the winter is we have some some in our net situation, we have little bits of string. So little bits of string in the side netting, which create little boxes and little targets. So that's just a simple way you can have a gap that you're going to work to. So if you were to do it in this scenario, you might make up just by threading it in and out of the net, you can make up a little target or a little obstacle, which is acts as a fielder, and it gives you a little area to work towards. So you're looking to drive in certain areas, or you're looking to drop a single in certain areas, and you with different colours of string, which we've done before, you can have different shots for different angles. So you can work out where you're trying to hit hard, where you're trying to drop a single, where you're trying to hit over the top, etc., etc. So that's a good little way just to get you away from the practice of just hitting balls and hitting great shots, because ultimately those guys who net a lot without a lot of consideration for match what would be going on in a match or a game scenario may find it hard to transfer to that match situation. So try to make it always as relevant as we can do, especially when you've done your technical work and you're happy with how you're going to work from a technical point of view, then going on to try and get through that transfer into getting outside. It's a really good way just to have some little targets out there. You can also just mix them up and you can change them, or you can at the start of, as before each ball, at the start of each over, you might say that the certain targets are in play, so the depending on what color you've got in play. So that's quite a good simple way, a few bits of string, cost nothing really, but it just suddenly focuses the training and gives them a little bit more idea about direction and where they're actually trying to hit the ball.
Next question is from Harshal, and Harshal says, "Sir, I have a problem with bowling. When I jump to release the ball, my head falls to the right side. What should I do to avoid this?" And I guess we've talked about this kind of thing quite a lot recently, but I don't know if we've ever sort of comprehensively said what is falling away and what causes it and how can we prevent it, what are the main causes of it and how can we prevent it? Because it's very common. I can think of two players in our first team who fall away and it's not necessarily something which is easy to correct. So what can bowlers who fall away do? What is falling away and what can they do about it?
If he's falling away, so he's heading off towards, he's heading off the pitch as opposed to moving onto the pitch. And there's a number of things that could be causing it. And there could be all sorts of different combinations, but there are a few key ones. And I'll give you a couple. And I'm sure Gareth can chip in with a couple as well. And then we can maybe talk about afterwards how we can counter them. A couple of common things I see, though, are people who really overemphasize a high front arm pulling directly down. And if you pull directly down with your left arm, it doesn't mean you're going to automatically fall to the left-hand side. But if you're pulling down powerfully and your body is not particularly strong, a powerful pull downwards can make you fall sideways. And that can take you away towards that extra cover region if it's a same-handed batter as you are a bowler. So what you'd look to do is try and pull backwards or extend forwards to pull back rather than pushing upwards to pull down. And that's less likely to have you falling away to the side. Another common occurrence is when people start that pull, whether it's down or backwards, but they don't necessarily have that front foot on the floor. So they're just not quite synchronized upper body to lower body. As a result, they are slightly off balance, and when they start that pulling motion, then they're going to find that they are going to fall away again because they don't have the balance and their left side's working powerfully, be it in the right path or in a vertical path as opposed to horizontal. And again, that can cause that imbalance. Other things we've seen and we've talked about throughout the past months and years are simple alignment issues. So how do we align up our feet? How do we land after we've run in and jumped? Are we landing in a position where our feet are directly aligned to our target, so our momentum is going to flow towards our target? Or are we slightly crossed over in a position where we might find ourselves falling over? So there are a number of issues. I'm sure Gareth has got a few more issues. You can throw it straight away, but it's not an uncommon thing. There are reasonably simple ways of countering it. It's identifying what the issue is that you've got. So which one of them or which combination of things are going on for you before you can then look at how you can go about countering them.
Yeah, just to add to that, when we come into alignment, one of the things that causes misalignment is the bound, is the direction of the bound. So often when you see people running into bowl, they'll run up with their feet landing in a good line with their target, you know, landing underneath the line of their hips in their run-up, and then as soon as they go into that last stride before they jump, everything turns in towards the stumps, and all of a sudden the jump goes in towards the stump. So what goes in must come out. So, you know, because otherwise you're going to be running all over the pitch, you're going to be getting in front of the umpire, and you're not going to bowl for a particularly long time. So if you jump in towards the stumps, then, you know, the action-reaction, what goes in must go out, and everything else then will fall away to cover as a result of that. So that's one of the biggest causes to me. And often that's also associated with a front knee collapse as well, from a fast bowler perspective that we've talked about a lot. So if your front knee is collapsing, often that's because your weight is going in a direction you don't want it to, and then you're having to shift your weight and readjust. And as a result of that, the forces are too much, and you have to break at the knee effectively and then fall away to the offside. It's also associated with back problems as well, having this side flexion at point of release to try and get you off the pitch and to get everything realigned. So often we'll see that there'll be some back issues or a stiffening around the back, and maybe even worse as a result of that. So alignment's key. The other thing I'd say on alignment is that the more we look into this as bowlers, what is alignment? And most people will talk about alignment being the lineup of the feet, whereas Stephen Jones, Ian Pont, and more coaches now are looking at alignment of the feet in the delivery stride, landing underneath the line of the hips, as opposed to lining up on the straight line. When we're running along a road, we don't put one foot directly in front of the other. We have them landing underneath the line of the hips, so that should be the same within the bowling action. But one of the biggest causes for me is the alignment, and the jump into your back foot contact is absolutely crucial, because if you get that bit right, you'll hopefully stand in a good delivery position and get your feet in underneath the line of your hips when you're in your delivery stride. And as a result of that, you're more likely to follow through towards the target and then just veer off slightly, as opposed to leaking out and going towards cover like it suggests in the question.
A simple rule we try and employ from a young age, so we try and make sure that years sevens and eights in particular try and work to it, is really, really easy to pick up, and it's just run straight, jump straight, push straight. And that's what we say over and over again: run straight, jump straight, push straight. If they do those things pretty well from their last four or five steps into their bound, then they generally find that most things continue in a straight line, and hopefully that will be the start of getting that momentum and that ball going in towards the target.
It's soapbox time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and that is 60 seconds on the clock, and somebody talking for that entire 60 seconds about a subject that's getting to them this week. And that person this week is Mark Garraway. Garris, over to you.
Well, this one's more of a discussion piece rather than a gripe, I suppose. But traditionally, schools cricket ends at the end of the summer term, which is great, you know, but it's quite a short term, wherever you are in the world. And something that is being discussed at the moment between a number of the independent schools and the ECB is extending the cricket season into September, because often September weather is better than April weather, I'm sure that's similar around the world as well, with the different seasons affecting the game. But so I'd really look to push to see if we can play cricket later, because whether it be my romantic red glasses that I look through that makes everything rose-tinted or not, but September is a pretty good month weather-wise in the UK, and I'm sure correlates to other months around the world as well. Can we extend cricket? That's my big question. Can we have three or four games in the month that normally comes after the ending of the season? I'm sure the groundsman will probably kick off about it, but it's worth a discussion, and I'd like to see as much cricket played as possible, because I am a cricket badger.
That's the end of the show for another week. We have flown through it, as we always do. But before we go, finally, we just need to decide on this week's winner of the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So we had Barpreet's question about picking the gaps, and we had Harshal's question about hopefully falling away. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Bar Freak because it got me on to speaking about a bloke that I think is an absolute legend, which is Barry Richards. Yeah. And also we had a bit of cross-fertilisation from rugby. So Bar Freak, you are the winner this week.
Congratulations, Bar Freak. Have a look at the courses there and see which one you like the look of. There's a nice one from one of the kings of picking the gaps, Michael Bevan. So take a look at that one, possibly.
Nice link.
Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to send in their question to the show and have it answered and have the possibility of winning the prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us a line on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. Our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad, and you can find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. So that's the social media covered. We also are available every week to listen. If you want to do that, you can just go to your podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us in there. Click on or tap on the subscribe button to do that. And if you want to get the show notes, or you want to stream the show, or you want to get the RSS feed for the show, or any other detailed element like that, then all you need to do is go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link in the bar at the top, and you'll get all the information on all the latest shows, including a way to stream the shows if you want to do that. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.